Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We would like to acknowledge the Turrbal and Yuggera people as the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, and we would like to pay respect to the elders past, present and emerging.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to General Queries, a podcast about the Brisbane queer scene. I am your host, Talia. I am joined in the studio today with the dulcet tones. Would you like to be dulcet tones?
I can be dulcet tones, okay, if you require me to be.
Wonderful. We are joined in the studio today with the dulcet tones of my wonderful co-host, Nita. How are you doing?
I'm good. And yourself?
It's been a rough end to semester, but look, I went and I bought a Lush bath bomb the other day because I never
goddamn queen.
Yeah, right. I never buy bath bombs, and it was the golden one. Nice. I think it's called Sunnyside or whatever. It's like a bubble bar as well. It was just, sometimes I forget that like baths are self-care, but baths are definitely self-care.
They are 100% self-care, and I like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just Lush bath bombs are nice.
Lush bath bombs. If you have the money, go out and get yourself a Lush bath bomb.
Yes. Yeah. And like also cut it in half so that way you get two baths for the price of one.
Yeah. I think like with, especially with the bubble bars, because the bubble bars are like quite strong. Like just, you don't need all of it. You just have that boy. So
that is our self-care advice from General Queries. Yeah. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself. Now that you've finished the semester, or if you're like about to enter exams, because we're in the exam period.
Or if you're not in college at all, but just need to treat yourself.
Yeah. Treat yourself. Just take some time out of your day. Treat yourself.
You are valid, Uwu.
So I'm going to ignore that and just kind of move on to the next topic of conversation.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I feel like we should probably address the fact that, yes, we as a podcast have been out for 2 weeks. That's because we're all uni students, and I don't know about the rest of the team, but I had like 3 major like 50% assessments all due in the span of a week.
Same.
And it just kind of got to this point where I went, I can't really come in to record today because I actually need to be at home and I need to finish this. And I know like you could be like, oh, but you need to like pre-plan your time and stuff. That's true. But also things get hectic, life happens, and what we had planned, what we do have planned, which we're about to start, is a whole lot of specials about Stonewall. And I wanted to do them right. Like I didn't just want to release half-baked episodes, if that makes sense. Yeah. So
only full-baked.
Only full-baked. I'm not quite sure if that's a cake thing or a weed thing, but there we go. Either or, yeah. I wanted to do it right or as best as we could. And I felt that given the time that we had and the effort that it was going to take to make those episodes good, we did need to just kind of pause and wait for semester to finish for everyone. So that is why we took the break. We're really sorry that we did, and we're really sorry that we gave short notice. We apologize. Thank you for all sticking with us through this trying time. But yes, we are back, and we're going to do a couple of episodes about the Stonewall riots. So yeah,
hold on to your butts, people.
Yeah, hold on to your butts. Yeah. So I specifically wanted to do Stonewall in like a different kind of format of episodes. So what we usually do is like a conversation-y kind of episode where we like just talk to people, see how it goes. It's cute. We've done like panel episodes like in February, which are a different format, and I like them. This is going to be slightly different again. So just Nita and I are going to give you a brief slash in-depth overview of like what the Stonewall Riots are, why they're important, and kind of go from there. So yeah, why did I pick Stonewall to start with, you ask? I can hear you asking, Nita. Thank you.
I am asking, yeah. Silently in my head.
Yeah, thank you, Nita.
Why did you pick Stonewall, Talia?
Why did I pick Stonewall to start with? The answer is it's June, which means it's Pride Month. And also,
happy Pride Month, everybody!
Happy Pride Month, everyone! And 2019 is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. So I thought it would be best to kind of start off this, to test a new format on one of the biggest sort of queer celebrations that we have.
All right, then.
Yes. So I think, like with stuff like this, it's really important that we start teaching the history. So that's what I kind of hope to do with episodes like this, kind of going back and looking at, like, you know, this is what's happened, this is how we got here. And I think, you know, everyone kind of talks about Stonewall, but nobody actually knows what Stonewall is.
What is Stonewall, what is Stonewall? Talia?
And that is definitely a question that we will answer.
Hooray!
Hooray! I remember, like, when we were talking with Josh, who is the USQ Pride sort of co-founder. He was talking about Stonewall, and then I was having a conversation with someone about it, and they were like, yeah, like, I know of Stonewall, but I'm not quite sure what exactly Stonewall was, what Stonewall is. Like, it's one of those things where people are like, we know it's prevalent, but we know it's prevalent and important, but we don't know what it actually is. So that's kind of what I'm
not going to lie. Most of my knowledge on Stonewall comes from drunk history.
Yeah. And that's kind of like really interesting, like the way we've kind of developed a myth around like what Stonewall is as well. Cause like I did watch the Drunk History stuff, and because we've got like all of these different versions about what actually happened at Stonewall, I don't think the version that Drunk History gave is the right one.
All right, that's fair.
We'll get into it later. But it's like, it's a good version of history. I don't think it's
correct.
I don't think it's the correct one. So yeah. So basically, yeah, we're trying something new. We're gonna see how it floats. See how it goes. We wanted to do it right. We will, because this is a history episode. We're going to find a way to get like all of the links to all of the information. Find a way to get all of the links to all of the information out to y'all. Whether that's like we put like a bibliography at the end of the show notes, or we just do like a huge Facebook post or something like that. We will figure it out. But I've also made sure that I only use resources that everyone can access. Because again, that's an issue with like queer history where it's not well documented. And then the documentation that we do have is kind of gated off.
Yes, it is, which is a little bit of a shame.
Yeah. So I have done...
You've done a lot of digging, Talia. This has been your baby.
This has been my baby. I've been working on this one since January, and I've wanted to do it right.
I am Talia's research assistant, and I basically offered her, do you want a hand with this? And I was basically told, no, Nita, this is mine. No, stay away.
This is my child.
It was like trying to ask a dragon to part with some of their hoard.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of hoping that I did it right, and we'll see how we go. I also want to give a shout out to, you, because thank you so much for being like, hey, Talia, you should maybe focus on something that isn't Stonewall for a little bit. I also want to give a shout out to Harper for doing a little bit of work for me. And I'd like to give a shout out to my friend Rosie, who was the one who suggested doing a Stonewall special and helped me kind of set up sort of the beginnings of my research.
Shout out to Harper, Rosie, and moi.
Yeah, shout out to Nita indeed. If anyone actually wants to talk to me about Stonewall, I'm more than happy to talk about it. Like, if someone just wants to message the Facebook page and be like, I want to talk about Stonewall now, like, I will happily do that, because I really do encourage people to, like, take this series as sort of like a stepping stone to do further research. Because as much as I have tried to do research, there's so much more out there. And, like, things connect to things. Like, you get, like, this network of, like, how things came to end up at Stonewall and how things kind of went from Stonewall.
Listen, I don't want to say it's like a conspiracy theorist string board, but it is absolutely 100% absolutely a conspiracy theorist string board. That's what all good research looks like.
Yeah, and especially with something as badly documented as Stonewall, like I, you may come across information that I didn't even find, and I'd be like, oh my God, I have not even seen that. Wow, where did you find it? And then, like, you know, there are conversations that we could have around Stonewall and stuff like that that that'd be really interesting to have if people have the time and they're interested.
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah. History is it's a good thing, and it's always really good to research and see whatever you can find.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I just want to make a couple of points at sort of the top of the series. This is hello, welcome. This is the Stonewall Riots. It is. It is the most defining queer riot in history, I think, that we've got.
It's pretty famous.
It's mildly famous, you know. But
it has its moments.
Yeah. I do want to do a shout out to all of the trans and gender non-conforming people who are usually disregarded in the conversation, even though they are basically the reason we have them. Also want to do a shout out to all of the people of color. Because they're also disregarded in the conversation a lot.
And y'all rock.
Yeah, y'all rock. You're literally the reason we have Stonewall and we have Pride as it currently exists. And a lot of the documentation that we have kind of disregards you. Like I came across so many like formal pieces of documentation that were just talking about like the fact that Stonewall was a big step forward for gay and lesbian rights, but they refused to mention like the trans people.
You know, everything after the LNG.
Yeah, everything after the LNG. I also want to just give like a brief little content warning because this is a riot and stuff like that. We are going to be talking a lot about...
There's going to be some mentions of homophobia and transphobia and biphobia and all those little phobias.
Those
queer phobia in general. Is queer phobia a word?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So yeah.
Not cool, but cool.
But yeah, it's relevant to the conversation, but yes. Also we need to flag that before we get into it.
Just so you know, like if you don't like hearing about that stuff, then, you know, man, just take this with caution.
Take it with caution.
Here there be dragons.
Yeah, we have warned you. There you go. Okay, do we want to get into it?
Let's go.
Let's go. Okay, so what I have done, we're going to start off with the context of the world, and we're going to slowly work our way down to Stonewall.
Sweet.
Are you ready?
I am ready for some world context.
Okay, so here's some world context for you. It is 1969. We are in America. Yeah, it is June.
Land of the free.
Land of the free, home of the brave.
I'm sorry for my horrible American accent.
You're fine. So yeah, we are late 60s. This is a time of civil unrest. Mm-hmm. And it's the height of like hippie culture and anti-Vietnam rhetoric.
Definitely yes.
That word right.
You did say it right, but you didn't spell it right on your notes.
That's true. This is because the Vietnam War had been going on for quite a long time.
Quite a while.
So there was kind of a lot of...
It was not a popular war.
Was it popular? Wow, it'd be like that. There was a lot of, like, I guess, anti-military...
Leanings,
a lot of anti-military sentiments. And there was also, like, because there was kind of this left-leaning radicalism, there was then a reaction to that left-leaning radicalism in that we had McCarthyism.
Yes.
So do you know what McCarthyism is?
I know vaguely of McCarthyism, but I might have learned about it in a different word when I was doing my history of the 60s.
That's fair. So McCarthyism was a movement headed by a senator called...
Was he called McCarthy?
He was. I think his name was Joseph McCarthy. It was basically a Red Scare. So it was about...
Oh, God, you gotta love your Red Scares, yeah, man.
It was about... It wasn't so much about finding the communists. It was just about accusing people of being communists until they were, like, imprisoned or they were kicked out of their jobs. It was a scare campaign more than anything. If you've ever, not to be a theatre student, but if you've ever heard of a play by Arthur Miller called The Crucible.
I do believe I have heard of that one, yeah, yes.
It's popular to do in schools. So
not in my school. We were just doing Shakespeare all the time.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Which, you know, that's also
fun. I mean, like, Shakespeare's fine or whatever, but Crucible...
Shakespeare is like 90% dick jokes, so like...
Yeah, it's pretty fun. You dress up the dick jokes as like high culture and yeah, like look at Sonnet 135. It's a good time. But yeah, so just to like give a little brief kind of overview of like the Crucible, it's set in the Salem witch trials. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a witch hunt. It's a literal witch hunt.
Those are always fun.
Yeah. The idea is like, they accused anyone of being a witch, and then, I think it was like, if they would hang them, and if they died, they weren't a witch. And if they lived, they were a witch, and they were burnt at the stake.
They did a lot more than hang them. One of the most popular ones was to throw them in the water. Yeah. And this is like, they'd throw them in the water, and if they floated, they were a witch. And if they sunk and drowned, they weren't a witch. And like half the time, they'd like throw them into really shallow things so that they kind of landed and were just kind of like, there's nothing to sink into. And like, a witch!
Yeah.
She weighs the same as a duck.
Oh, no. The movie has Winona Ryder in it. Like, if you can find a copy of it, I definitely recommend watching it. But yeah, that's kind of like the kind of witch hunting kind of
vibe.
The witch hunting vibe that was kind of going on down at during the 60s.
During the 60s with the Red Scare and the Vietnam War and the hippies and the witch hunts for the communists.
So,
gotta love it. No, you don't.
Yeah, no, you don't. You really don't.
So, Talia, what is the queer context behind Stonewall?
I'm so glad you asked.
Are you now?
Yeah. Okay, so before the 60s, before Stonewall happened, there was a lot of the efforts of gay rights groups were focused on like assimilating queer people into mainstream society, and these had usually favored non-confrontational methods. Like a lot of them were just like, queer people are just like straight people and they can get married. And no, it was usually focused on gay people more than anything else. It was more like, you know, gay people are like, they love just like straight people. They just want to get married like straight people. They just want to have kids like straight people. So it was very much like when we talk about assimilation, it's not about we are two separate things or we are different. We are outside of your box. It's very much just like, can you please let us join the treehouse, please? Please.
We want to join the Borg.
Yeah. Please. The rise of McCarthyism, because of the rise of McCarthyism, between 1947 and 1950, thousands of queer people lost their U.S. government jobs just for being gay or being thought of as homosexual. Yes. And the FBI kept a list of all known gay people. There was also you could be arrested for being gay, being openly gay.
And it would show up in the papers.
And it would show up in the papers. They would keep, like, they would publish a list of people being like, these people are gay, do not touch. And that is a direct...
They will steal your children like the fae of old.
Yeah, and that's like...
And that is why gay people are called fairies.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Yeah, we'll go and we'll research that one further. But yeah, that's also like the whole thing with like... kind of like the queer manhunt is also very much linked to McCarthyism. Like, yes, those two things are not separate. They're not disparate. They are very much linked to each
other.
They
are entwined.
Yeah, they are entwined. Homosexuality was illegal during that time. It was also considered an illness. So in 1952, the American Psychiatric Association added homosexuality to the DSM as a mental disorder and believed it to be caused by traumatic parent-child relationships. So the DSM is a diagnostic tool that psychologists use to diagnose you with mental illnesses. And it's still used today. I'm not saying that, you know, I think we're currently in the DSM-5. That's our current version of it.
They do tend to upgrade when new information comes out. Yeah. New information such as, hey, homosexuality is not a mental disorder. And then they decide we should change that.
Yeah. I think it came up during the February specials that the DSM-5 does technically classify asexuality as a mental illness or a disorder.
It's not perfect.
Yeah, and
work in progress.
And they do not if a patient says I think you know X, Y, and Z things, the psychologist is under no obligation to tell the client about asexuality, and they can be diagnosed with, I think it's called hyposexual disorder, which mean like that person will then be treated with intense hormone therapies. And there's like it's a whole lot of, we'll do like a whole other thing on it later.
It's a thing.
The DSM-5 is not a God-given diagnostic manual. It is a man-made thing. It is very much in flux.
It's very fallible.
And very fallible. So yes.
But it can still be a hell of a read.
Yeah. It's a lot. So because there were so many like anti-queer sentiments, and this was kind of like the context that they were living in, kind of their day-to-day lives, queer bars, gay bars, were considered the only place of refuge for queer people to be themselves in relative safety. Relative being the key term in that sentence.
Yeah.
It was
safer than the rest of the world, but like still not that safe.
Yeah. There was also, and this is more for trans and gender non-conforming people and for especially butch lesbians as well. There was also a piece of legislation, which we will talk about later, which meant that at any one time someone had to wear 3 articles of gender appropriate clothing, and they could be searched to make sure that those articles of clothing matched their
birth gender.
The gender they're assigned.
Yes,
it's
a thing.
It was not a good thing to implement.
Not a good thing.
Would you
like me to read the quote?
Yeah. So what I've done is sometimes I've come across things and I'm like, oh, you said that really well. And also I want to sound like a university educated person. So we're going to quote from some people.
All right then.
Yeah.
This one is a quote from David Carter.
Yes.
The assault on lesbians and gay men explains why the self-image of homosexuals was so negative in the 1950s and 1960s. The minds of gay people had been so colonized by the heterosexual world that almost no one could imagine a positive gay identity, let alone a positive gay culture.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so so this is the world in which they live. Let's talk about queer language and queer identity politics for half a second.
Yeah, no worries. I'm always down to talk about queer language and queer identity politics.
Oh, good, because that's my life. Okay, so I think it's important to kind of put these terms within their linguistical historical context, because language is dynamic and fluid and kind of ever-changing, and especially within the gender non-conforming community. Trans and gender non-conforming communities, the language has definitely changed. Like, I don't think, like with the words like gay and bisexual, asexuality is definitely a thing from the 60s. There is like actual documentation
of it existing.
Yeah, it's been around longer than
It does exist.
Yeah, it did exist. It still continues to exist. In the 60s, the term queer was used as a slur.
It is not used as a slur anymore, but it was used as a slur back then.
Yeah, it has been reclaimed since.
It has been reclaimed.
There are still some people who are like, no, I do not want that word used around me. And that's completely fine and valid. Like in some parts of the world, it is still used as a slur.
It is.
But in the 60s, it was very, very heavily used as a slur.
Yes.
It had not at that point been reclaimed. Also, the term gay was more commonly used to refer to all LGBT people.
Gay was kind of a blanket term back then.
Yeah, it was very much a blanket term. So that's kind of like those bad boys. The biggest language difference that we have between sort of then and now is for those people who are gender non-conforming. And I think it's important to note this because we're going to talk about trans and gender non-conforming people quite a bit.
All right then.
Cat Black actually does a really, really good video kind of explaining like her thoughts on it. and, you know, how everything kind of aligns. She says that the identities are not binary. So in the 60s, the terms transgender and transsexual were around. However, it was really common for gender non-conforming people to call themselves transvestites and drag queens. In today's society, the term transvestite is very much a slur, and it refers to someone who is usually male, like identifies as male, but who derives sexual pleasure from dressing up in traditionally feminine clothes.
All right then.
Right. A drag queen usually refers to a man, self-identified man, who dresses up in women's clothes and drag and performs usually for the purpose of entertainment. So they're both, in today's context, they're very much external aspects of oneself. They're not internal identity things, if that makes sense.
That is very fair.
Yeah. The term transgender was around, but it wasn't as commonly used. So I think from memory, Marsha P. Johnson identified as a drag queen and a transsexual. Yes. But did not.
Getting a lot of nods from Zane here.
Getting a lot of nods from Zane, but did not identify as transgender. So, yeah. And again, because the identities are not a one-to-one binary kind of thing, it's really kind of difficult to just point at her and be like, she's a transgender woman. Whereas, like, no, she's not. Because that's not how she
identified. That's not how she identified. How she identified is how she identified.
Yeah, and it's also but then you kind of get into, like, you kind of go down the rabbit hole of being like, yeah, but also transsexual is also not a commonly used word, and it's
anymore.
And it's also, like, some people think that it's, like, a slur and it should be kind of left in the dust. Yeah, so it's a really kind of,
it's still important to know your history.
Yeah, it's important to know your history, know where you're coming from. And I think we're going to say she's a trans woman and just not add the last bit on. Yeah, so the point is that, like, language is contested, and there's a, like, if you do your own reading into Stonewall, a lot of the sources will take their own stance on language. Just kind of keep that in mind.
Keep an open mind about
it. Keep an open mind about it, and respect the identities that people identify with.
Language is forever changing, and you should not forget the language of the past.
Yeah, and it's
that way madness lies.
Yeah, and yeah, just kind of, I think that's the point that we're going to take on it. And okay, so that's kind of your wider context for what was happening at Stonewall. We are gonna wrap up. Next week we're going to talk about Stonewall, the actual place.
Awesome.
Yep.
Ooh, I look forward to that.
Thanks. Did a lot of research on this one, so I hope we're all going okay. I'm glad to have you all with me, everyone out there in podcast listening land. Thank you so much for tuning in, especially after our 2 weeks of radio silence. I hope that you will all continue with me on this journey, and I will see you next week. Nisha and I will see you next week.
I'll be here again.
Yay. Yeah, we'll see you next week so we can talk about Stonewall, Manhattan, the Stonewall Inn in Manhattan. Yeah, for everyone out there in podcast listening land, I hope that you are staying warm. Please remember to take your meds and to drink water.
And get a good night's sleep.
Get a good night's sleep. As Nisha said before, you are valid. Also, happy Pride.
Happy Pride!
You are valid and loved and worth the time and the space that you take up.
And the pride.
And the pride. And be proud. Yes.
Be proud.
We will see you next week.
Bye. Ta-ta.
The Disney vs. Disney Debates podcast is all about finding the answer to one simple question. What is the best Disney movie of all time? Maybe the question isn't that simple, So join us every Saturday as hosts from all across That's Not Canon fight for their movies in one-on-one debates moderated by me, Zane C. Weber, in order to decide once and for all which of Disney's beloved classics or recent hits will take the crown.
Mine.
Save it for the show. Available now on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you find podcasts.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.